With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Taco Palenque fans, we have something special for you. Try the Casero Taco now for only $2.75 Monday through Thursday. Flavor packed with premium sirloin rice and refried beans. Only at Taco Palenque. At participating locations for limited time, not valid for delivery. Other restrictions may apply.
From a highly secure network of top secret locations across North America, this is the Spurs Insider back with you for 2024. We took a holiday break, but here we are. I'm your host, Mike Finger, joined as always by Express News beat writers Tom Orsborn and Jeff McDonald and Express News sports editor Nick Talbot. I'm going to mention this is brought to you as always by Taco Palenque again in 2024. And since we last talked to you, we once again learned that Tom Orsborn is not exactly Nostradamus. How many victories in this hiatus had you predicted, Tom? They ended up with one.
Yeah.
I think you predicted three.
No.
I'm out of the prediction business.
It's part of my New Year's resolutions. No more predictions.
I think we can go back to the archives.
I predicted a win in Chicago.
Yeah, and then there was one at home against Utah, and one of the two in Portland, I think, was the prediction. And
really?
And your local Cagers got one. I might be conflating you and Jeff together, but yeah. All your local Cagers got was the first night in Portland, and here we are. Where are we heading into this new year with the San Antonio Spurs?
We're on a minutes restriction. That's where we're at.
We've got 3 minutes till the end of this podcast because we got to preserve ourselves for the stretch run and for our long term future.
What a scary, strange moment in Dallas 2 days before Christmas. My God,
that's a good place to start.
Yeah. Oh my gosh,
where were you? Where did you see this? Where were you?
I was at my seat at Press Row, one of the rare Press Row seats left in the league, sitting next to my fellow Lee High School alum, Brad Townsend, former competitor at the San Antonio Light, longtime Dallas Morning News reporter. And Tom James rushes up to us.
For the listeners at home, who's Tom James?
Tom James is the longtime Spurs media director.
The right-hand man of Greg Popovich.
Yes, yes. He was mentioned
enforcer.
In the fall.
Supporter, all that stuff.
Mentioned it in his Hall of Fame speech, actually. Yeah. So anyway, he rushes up. He says, Wemby will not be playing tonight. He stepped on a ball boy's foot. And I immediately said, how is the ball boy? and got a little bit of a grin, but you know, he explained the whole situation. He was pretty serious. And then about 2 minutes later, Jordan Hauenstein comes up to us, the number two guy, Tom James's number two guy.
Only in rank, not in our hearts. Jordan's
right.
Really number two to no one, but go ahead.
Well, he comes up and explains the same situation. So, yeah, it's just really strange. We pieced it all together with a video. And then after the game, I don't think I've seen Pop that ashen or grim.
Yeah, well, that's mean, really was, saying something.
He was. It was a, yeah. Maybe that's a little over the top, but he was shook up. The whole organization was. I walked out with Mitch Johnson, one of the assistant coaches, afterward, and he was on the court at the time helping Wemby warm up when he stepped on the ball boy's foot, and he was pretty shook up about the whole thing. So.
And in the meantime, Wemby is wondering why in the heck they're holding him out because he feels
right,
fine.
Right.
I'm told, and this may be an apocryphal story.
That, no, I heard the same thing.
For the listeners at home, what's apocryphal?
Man, you're full of definitions this morning.
Seriously.
Enough.
He, I'm told Wimby after that was going through the layup line and did like a between the legs dunk, and then went over to Pop and like, I just did a between the legs dunk. I'm fine, and Pop still wouldn't let him play.
Yeah, they were going back and forth until, you know, close to tip off about it, and you know, the explanation to me was, you know, the medical staff. Once you tweak an ankle like that, your ligaments are a little stretched. You're more vulnerable to injury. And there was just no way they were going to take a chance with the franchise.
It could be noted he has turned that ankle three times in the last month. And that's kind of to that point.
Yeah.
Once you stretch those ligaments, they say, you become more susceptible to it. And you become more susceptible to the next one being worse and being something that really keeps you out. But going back to it, has there been any reporting? Did the ball boy play that night? Like, did he participate? Did he do his job, or was he out as well?
I think he continued. He soldiered on. I think, poor guy, you know, I think, you know, who knows what happened. I mean, he could have been further back. The Spurs staff might've scooted him back a little bit. I don't know.
Pop says the ball boys need to be more nimble. Like, that needs to be a qualification.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where the ball boy tryouts is.
They need to run them through cones and do.
Or just, you know, if you see a 7'3" guy running at you, get out of the way.
We've been talking at some point. I don't know if it was on the podcast or in real life. We do every now and then talk in real life, as annoying as that sometimes is.
I haven't
talked
to any of you jokers in real life in quite some time. Since last year.
That's true.
About how. There rarely has been during the Wimby era in San Antonio when you see him take like a scary fall. Like he, even like Jeff said, when he has turned his ankle, he's been perfectly fine. And I mentioned before, like, you know how Tom Brady knows how to fall. He never gets hurt. And I don't mean to be jinxing everything now, but he's just the type of guy he's sort of the anti Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis, great player, probably a future Hall of Famer. But he has what appears to be a career-ending injury every time I ever watch him play in person or on TV. It's like every time he tumbles, the whole arena holds its breath and it looks like it's the end of everything. Whereas Wimby takes some of the most ridiculous, like you say, turned ankles, whatever, sprawling out of bounds, and just seems fine. And even on this one, like Tom said, he was ready to play right afterwards. And I guess part of that is being young. Part of that is all the stretching he does. He's extremely flexible. But he's, so far, he's not Anthony Davis. He's not Zion. He's not giving the fans, the teammates, the coaches reason to just fret about every fall. We'll see how long that lasts. And I guess the Spurs have reason to be real careful about stuff like this. They held him out. We have to cover 2 weeks here. But they held him out of the second part of that following back-to-back at Portland and triumphed, prevailed, romped in that first game. And without him, it wasn't nearly as successful. But I just think it's interesting, even though the Spurs are being careful with him injury-wise, he hasn't shown the propensity to make them worry.
Right. And even before then, he was out against Milwaukee. I was on that three-game trip. He was the night before the game, they announced him being out. Then he was limited in Chicago, and then, of course, out in Dallas.
But all these limitations were not because Wimby said,
No.
I need limitations. He wants to play.
Quite the opposite. I'm actually told, you know, they put him down. They sat him out the second night in Portland, and there was an actual internal debate on how to list him. Is it rest? Is it injury? Is it injury management? And Wimby apparently is very, especially in English, I guess, is very literal. And he was like, but I'm not hurt. My ankle doesn't hurt. You can't put down injured. I'm not injured. So that's how they settled on rest. To him, it makes more sense. And it's not such a blow to the pride, I guess, to say rest, because he understands, oh, rest is doing something good for my body. Whereas if you put down injury, he doesn't want to look like he's injury prone, especially when in his mind, I'm not hurt. I'm just, the doctors are telling me I have to rest, but I'm not hurt.
And that is so fascinating for a number of reasons, because there's a generation, or maybe it's not generational, but another type of player who might have the opposite thought about it. Like, don't tell people I'm resting, tell people that I'm actually hurt. Like, that's less shameful sit out with an injury.
I actually think it's a cultural thing. The Americans would rather tell people that they're hurt and not resting. And the Europe, maybe I'm generalizing here. The international players are more prone to accept rest as a reason instead of, an injury that might not be an injury.
Because they have like the 3-day work weeks in France, right?
Fascinating, fascinating topic here.
It is indeed. Yeah, that's something we could get into on
the 3-day work week.
We're gonna have a cultural spinoff of the show where we just talk. We have Jeff on to talk about different nations, different traditions around the globe, and how it affects local cagers. I think
you
that'd be fun.
See how they do it in Sri Lanka.
You know, French reporters on here to confirm some facts about the French work weeks.
No, the French do not have 3-day work weeks. That was a bad, ugly American joke. Several times during the course of the Spurs season, I have somewhat semi-seriously filled the role of the ugly American in the post-game press conferences.
That is your nickname among the French.
What's funny, that was his nickname before the French even got here.
Yeah. Maxime, Benjamin, Theo, Vincent, every now and then. They love when I'm the ugly American. What else? I've been in the Big Easy. I've been with the Texas Longhorns. I've been away from the local cagers a little bit. So you guys have to steer me into the conversation we need to talk about with these guys.
I got something. Keldon Johnson is making his case for sixth man of the year. That's a new thing that wasn't the case 2 weeks ago when we last convened here.
That's somewhat sarcastic, right? Or not?
I mean, he's coming off the bench now, and he wasn't 2 weeks ago.
And okay. He's playing pretty well.
Okay,
averaged 20 points in his bench role there in 4 games.
But Barry, I mean, the list of problems that this team had when it was losing 18 in a row and 24 out of 25 or whatever it was, Keldon Johnson's play wasn't at the top of it, probably not near the top of it. So this is just another example of, I think I can speak for all 3 of us, all 4 of us, likable guy to cover. Spurs love him, and for him to kind of swallow his pride and say, yeah, I'm going to do that, like Manu Ginobili did, like so many Spurs did, I think that's an admirable thing. Because he can look at himself and say, hey, I'm not the reason we're losing. Why am I getting moved to the bench? But I just want to tip my hat there to the guy.
It was sort of the move I thought they were going to make from game one. Like with summertime when we were discussing which of the 6 guys is not going to start. The thing that made the most sense to me was to let Keldon Johnson like kind of come off the bench and you know, run amok on the second unit. Now, part of my thinking also at that point was that Trey Jones was going to be the starting
point
guard. So that hasn't come to fruition. But I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think you on the season opener, I think you were sitting next to me at the Frost and said, what does Keldon even do? Like, he's barely there. Like, he's just running around out there. He doesn't know how he fits with the starting unit. And I think moving to the bench gives him a more defined role. He has more minutes of being able to be the lead scorer off the bench than he does when he's playing in the starting lineup with Devin Vassell and Victor Wembanyama, who, let's face it, are going to take most of the shots when they're on the floor together. So
I think I did that night. I remember saying that, and I do remember in the season preview that ran the Express News, the Dead Tree Edition, which is still available to anyone who wants to come by and pick it up, full of great stories from Tom Orsborn and Jeff McDonald, and on expressnews.com on the Spurs Nation newsletter. In the season preview where I predicted that your local cagers would win 35 games, which turned out to be a bit off.
Season's not over.
I'd thrown something in there about how Keldon was going to move to the bench in December or something along those lines, maybe November. So you're right. This was something that we saw as an option. And maybe it'll work out long term. But I still think, even though we saw it coming, he's the veteran guy. He's the guy who other players look to as a leader in a way. And for him to, even though, like Pop said, if Manu Ginobili can do it, anybody can do it. The fact that he did do it and didn't complain about it is worth a nod. That's worth a tip of the hat.
I mean, he scored his season high off the bench. He's been there four games and he had a 29-point game, which is a season high. So I think he's liking it.
Yeah. Yeah. Where else you need to direct this?
Is it going to make any difference in terms of wins and losses right now? Probably not, but you got to try something, right?
We should mention this. We are recording this on the morning of January 2nd, the Tuesday, as always. It'll hit your digital players on Wednesday. So we don't have the benefit of that Memphis game. Tom's in Memphis, walking in Memphis.
I have a clue. Barely, I know Tom's not in the prediction business, but
yeah,
Memphis, you know, as of this, this podcast has won 11 in a row against the Spurs. So, you know, maybe the Spurs are due, but I think it will go the other way.
I think that
be a tough week.
Yeah. That game that played on Tuesday night that we're not talking about because we haven't seen it yet. The key for the Spurs defense, as always, when playing Memphis, three words, Jeff. You know what it is?
Where is Ja?
Where is Ja? That's what the Spurs defenders need to be asking all night long. Not sure they're going to be able to take care of him, but who knows? We might sound stupid on Wednesday morning when you're listening to this after
wouldn't be the first
a Spurs
time.
Romp. Wouldn't be the first.
They have the NBA's leading shot blocker. That's something they didn't have against Ja before. So
that's true. What has you wrote about Wemby's shot blocking exploits? What else has stood out? If we're going to start the new year talking about positive things, what else is positive with this team these days?
I like Wemby's use of the word dystopia. That was a fun one to drop out of nowhere.
For the listeners at home, tell them first of all what dystopia is and where that came from.
The endless Saskatchewan graphs here. And tell us what a Saskatchewan graph is, Mike.
Do we really want to go down there? Because I will bore the listeners with all these Saskatchewan explanations, and I'm not sure they're going to be entertained by it. They want the O's and X's. Some of them still want the O's and X's, which we just can't provide. But now I feel like I'm veering away from a very nice little dystopian anecdote, and I want Jeff to handle that. No. And if there's time later, I'll get into the Saskatchewan graph. But go ahead, Jeff. What is a dystopia? What did Victor Wembanyama think was dystopian? And just enlighten the listeners on all this stuff.
It's not the greatest anecdote ever, but
I thought it was funny.
You know, when he's playing those games in Portland, or that game Victor played in Portland was his first NBA game against fellow high draft pick Scoot Henderson, and all the year before, as we remember, the previous 12 months, all last summer, leading up to the draft, those two were kind of seemed to be considered the guys that were going to go 1 and 2. Scoot fell to 3, but at this time, 2 Octobers ago, we thought they were 1 and 2 in the NBA draft. And they play Victor's.
For the listeners at home, what exactly is the NBA draft? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We actually had a copy editor.
I know.
Well, no, this predates the one you're thinking of.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of the training camp one.
Yeah, she would want these kind of explanations in print.
I see.
It was really tough writing about sports like hockey because she wanted everything explained. But I digress. Back to dystopia.
Well, just to describe what might be an inside joke, we had a podcast years ago
this podcast is just full of left turns. We can't keep a thought.
Oh, hopefully Nick and left turns, we go in a circle here.
We had a podcast years ago where I was asked in the middle of it, like I was talking about, so-and-so doing well, turning heads in training camp. And then the follow-up question that I was asked was, for the listeners at home, what is training camp?
There you go.
It just floored me. Anyway, back to the story. Scoot and Victor played that exhibition game in Vegas in October 2022. And so when they played again in Portland, that was their first meeting in the NBA. And a lot of reporters were asking questions about that and flashing back to their first meeting in Vegas and how that went. And it was Victor's first game on U.S. soil and you know, what he was thinking at that time, et cetera, et cetera. And I was just curious. I wasn't really expecting any kind of great answer. I just kind of threw it out there. You know, this was your first game on U.S. soil. It was also like your first experience with Las Vegas. Like, what did you just think of that as a whole? Just the lights and the glitz and the glamour and everything. And Victor said, well, to me, it's the closest thing on Earth to a dystopia. And I about died because I wasn't expecting that answer. And I just loved the fact that the 19-year-old French kid is using the word dystopia in English when, as you alluded to earlier, most English-speaking people probably can't define that word. And I loved it so much. And as with everything, it went viral. And now some people are mad that he's slamming Las Vegas. And what I didn't think of at the time and haven't had a chance to circle back to is one of Victor's teammates is a Las Vegas native.
That's so true.
I wanted to ask Zach Collins what he thought about Victor slamming his hometown and really, you know, starting some kind of locker room drama. But Zach got hurt, so we haven't talked to him since.
So one of the things that pull it a little full circle for one of the stories that Tom wrote, one of the reasons he might know what a dystopia is because he reads Brandon Sanderson novels.
Yes. Yes.
And the Mistborn series that he likes is a dystopian novel.
There you go.
That's why he might know what a dystopia is.
There you go. I read Berenstain Bears novels.
That seems on that tracks.
Those are also, to be fair, those also are dystopian.
So does Zach.
Talking bears wearing pants. I mean, my goodness.
Yes.
It's interesting. You know, Zach, you're talking about dissing his hometown, but I wonder if native Las Vegans view the Strip, you know, as Las Vegas.
Yeah. I mean, Victor was really talking about the Strip. He wasn't talking about, like, Henderson, Nevada, or, you know, the suburbs, the place where people live. He was really talking about that's not his scene. And I think we've known him long enough now to understand that Vegas scene that you think of is not his scene. And that's all he was saying.
Well, no, and one of his biggest moments... biggest viral moments early in his career as an NBA player was on that Strip with
when he met Britney Spears.
When he met Britney Spears. For the people at home, we have younger listeners. Can you explain who Britney Spears is? The Saskatchewan graph on Britney Spears. Do I need to define that? Do people care, Tom?
I think they do.
Where is Saskatchewan?
It's a province.
What is a province?
In the nation of Canada.
What is Canada?
A long time ago, more than 20 years ago, more than 25 years ago. I was a mere college kid. And took journalism classes, and there was a guy called Mike Quinn, who I think Jeff knows.
Yeah, Coach Quinn.
Coach Quinn, who actually
he's
covered,
not a coach, by the way.
He covered the JFK assassination. He was, I think he was there when they shot Jack Ruby shot Oswald. He was one of the first guys. But in teaching journalism, he had a requirement in all news stories that there be near the bottom of the story, after you give the who, what, when, where, why, all that type of stuff, to provide a Saskatchewan graph. And this is the paragraph that you used to see in news stories that would explain what you think should be known by 90% of the people who are reading the article about whatever happened in the news this week. Donald Trump not being allowed on the ballot in Colorado or whatever. Somewhere in that story, you have to write a paragraph for someone who has been in the wilds of Saskatchewan for the past year and might not have been following this at all and needs to be explained exactly who Donald Trump is and why he's not on the ballot in Colorado and what January 6th was and what have you. So the running joke of this podcast is I have been asking for these Saskatchewan paragraphs for all these topics that we're discussing. It's fun. And it's a good like journalism thing to know that you can't assume that readers know the whole story all the way through.
So with this example, you would say January 6th, comma, a tourist event.
There you go. No?
Okay.
I probably shouldn't have used that example. We're delving into some stuff that is better left to our friends at Pudo Politics, which you should also check out
on
your Express News podcast.
Well, I'm just glad you explained that because I thought you were still drunk from New Year's. So I think that explains why you're acting the way you are.
That's inappropriate. We still have some time. What else do we need to talk about Spurs wise? Is there any O's and X's to get into for the listeners who tune into us for the for the basketball strategy?
Since we mentioned Zach Collins, you know, tough break for him, but in context, not the toughest he's had in his career. You know, suffering that ankle sprain, and he's now out for 2 to 4 weeks. That's just a scary moment for him. Just like Wemby, you know, it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but you know, given his injury history, you just worry about him whenever he gets
was
hurt.
Very it shook him a little bit. If you want to talk about people being you know, it was the right ankle that he sprained in Portland. Not the left, which is good news. The left is the one he had surgically repaired 3 different times and caused him to miss entire seasons before joining the Spurs. But I think doing it and doing it in Portland where he was playing when his left ankle went south, I think it was kind of a mind's. I think it shook him because it just reminded him of all those times. So the fact that he came out of that only having to miss 2 to 4 weeks, I think everybody can look at that as positive news, you know, comparatively speaking.
Early in the season, we were talking about all the big guys they had and how they had 2 starting centers and plenty of guys in reserve. And now Charlie Bassey's gone and Zach Collins gone. And who's getting those backup minutes now? What are they doing?
Who'd they just sign, Tom? You wrote about him today.
Did I? Oh, yeah. Let's see. So I'll get his name right.
That's why I threw it to you.
I know. I knew what you were doing, Jeff.
Was it Gorgui Ding? Was it Gorgui Ding?
Yeah, no, it's the kid what a great pedigree. Won a national championship with Virginia and then was on the Bucks championship team. Mm-hmm. Mabadi Diakite. Did I get that right?
Yeah. There you go.
Yep. So they signed him yesterday to a 2-way contract. After another big man, Charlie,
Diaco, right?
Yes. He went down with a season injury as well with Austin. So big guys, you know, it's not a good time for the big guys, in the Spurs camp.
I think they need to bring Gorgui back to play.
Yeah.
He's around all the time.
Well, yeah. As I joked in the Dead Tree edition, they're going to re-sign Gorgui, but then Pop's going to start him at point guard.
Yeah. Oh, we need to get into that in the new year. Are we bringing the Trey Jeremy Sohan discussion into the new year? Or are we leaving that behind?
I'm okay to leave it behind.
Okay. The experiment has been left behind, isn't it?
Yeah, the experiment has been left behind. There was a moment there at the end of the old year, December 26th, when the Spurs played Utah. It appeared we were kind of guessing and reading between the lines at some things that Greg Popovich said, but we thought maybe Malachi Branham was about to be replaced as the point guard. And maybe this was, again, us just speculating. Maybe this was Trey Jones's chance finally, but no, that didn't come to fruition. Malachi had a really rough game against the Jazz and Pop pulled him less than 2 minutes into the second half. Did not return to the game till the very end, like the last couple minutes when they basically forced him to finish out a blowout loss. And after that game, Pop was talking about, you know, he's going to start demanding consistency from some people or else there's going to be some changes around here. And so we took that to mean like they're going to go to Portland and make maybe there's going to be a lineup shakeup in Portland, but there was not. And Malachi started both games in Portland, played really well in the first game that they won, and didn't play so hot in the second game that they lost. And I guess that would speak to the consistency or lack thereof that Pop has been bemoaning. But as for now, it seems like he's still the starting point guard and not Gorgui Jang. So that's where we
You know what would be just incredibly amazing? Jeff's been covering Greg Popovich for 17 years. Feels like he knows him because he's around him all the time. I've known Pop for 20 something years. Tom's known him even longer. They went back way back to the days when they walk up and down the Alamodome halls together. We feel like we know the guy. But what if we found out that all this time Pop has secretly been the most online person we've ever known and is doing all of this just to troll Twitter users? Just to troll people, like he is his going home every night and laughing because he knows that everyone in the world thinks he should play Trey Jones, and he's not doing it just to anger people online. I think that would be hilarious.
Yeah, remember fake Coach Pop on Twitter? Maybe he was the real Coach Pop.
Maybe that was him. Maybe that was him. Because the Trey Jones thing is reaching kind of comic proportions. Because he's clearly the best point guard they have. He throws lobs to Wemby that nobody else throws, and he does play with them. And again, like I've said before, we're talking about a few minutes a game that the starting point guard would play more than Trey Jones plays. So it's not the difference between making the playoffs and finishing in last place or anything like that. It's probably not the difference in many wins and losses, if any at all. But there has to be a point when you just say, start your best point guard at point guard. Like, why they won't do that is it has to just be screwing with people. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
It sounds like no way to run a basketball team then.
Clearly, it's not just to screw with people, but
seems like a good way to get the number one pick.
But this is not a very good draft. And I see Jeff having this argument with people who assume that the Spurs are tanking again. If they're tanking, that's a really, really poor strategy.
They're just bad.
They're just bad.
Speaking of really versatile guards that can do a lot for a team, Derek White, it was good seeing him on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's playing his little rear off.
My gosh, yes. Well,
he played his hair off, too.
he played his hair off. And with the understanding that when we reevaluate all these transactions, trades that were made in the years leading up to Wemby, like, they come with the asterisk of if they hadn't have done this, they might not have ended up with Victor, and they're better off with Victor than without him. But the longer we get away from that Derek White trade, the less great it looked for what the Spurs got in return. He's a really good player. The big prize was the pick. If you take out like the Romeo Langford stuff, which was just filler,
the pick became
Blake Wesley. Who still has a chance, but
is there a pick swap involved in that one?
There's a pick swap in like 28, I think.
So maybe
which may or may not pay off, but that's the only thing that's left. It's the trade right now is Derek White for Blake Wesley and a possible pick swap.
Well, they also got Josh Richardson. And who did they swap Josh Richardson for? A bunch of second rounds. There you
go. Yeah, second round. Okay. So there's trickle down stuff, but that's like Derek. And part of that is because Derek has just continued to get better and better. Like, I don't think Boston realized how good of a player they were getting when they got him.
Like, to your point, watching that game on New Year's Eve, I was like, you know who the Spurs need?
It's Derek White.
That would fix all the point guard issues is Derek White, like throwing lobs to Wemby.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, the rub of that is if you had kept Derek White, you don't have Wemby.
That was my point when I introduced this.
So I think it's a good trade.
Yeah. Like that's the way to look at it. If they had Derek White all along, there's no way they were bad enough last year to get Wemby. And the choice that was made, when they decided to do this and to become sort of intentionally bad last year was they wanted to be bad during that year, and that worked out. So why look back? Why look back in anger? Why look back in regret? We're in a new year. We're moving on. Does anybody want to add anything before I finish this up?
I'm looking forward to the next podcast when we hear Mike Finger explain the inverted pyramid.
That's something for the, I mean, that's going to bring the listeners back, man. I mean, that's that. If this just turns into like a podcast where we mention Victor Wembanyama as a means to get into really old school, outdated journalism lessons, like that's where we take over the internet.
A,
I think
a nut graph doesn't mean what you think it does.
Plus, we should have Sandro Mamu on the podcast to explain, you know, to talk about work weeks in his home country.
Uh-huh.
And just have a different guy every week, you know, international flavor to talk about work weeks, where they come from.
And the different cultures and the way they look at rest and injuries and things like that. Yeah, that'd be something. We're open to anything. We're open to your feedback. We will continue to do it. Look for you, not only on this podcast, but at expressnews.com with the Dead Tree Edition. Everybody have a good year, and take care of each other and keep it real.